Okay, we'll start with our opening prayers. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Vadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Welcome, everyone. I see a few new faces here. Those of you coming for the first time, have you ever been through any for a mindfulness meditation class at all? New people, yeah? No? Okay, so then the others have to put up with my few minute introduction to what mindfulness is about. Mindfulness meditation is just like, is another kind of meditation. There are many kinds of meditation. And if you have not read Swamiji's book, he's written a book on meditation, which describes different kinds of meditation. The most commonly practiced one is mantra japa. Many times, we do that many times on Saturday, where you take a mantra and repeat it. The repetition of a mantra, and the goal there is to kind of focus the mind, to make it one-pointed. Those are very yogic kind of meditations, where the goal mainly is focusing and concentration. There are other meditations where you focus on the breath, pranayama techniques, which help to calm the mind down, which help to pranayama is a prelude to focusing, really, because the mind and the breathing and the mind are very interrelated. So when you slower your breathing, your thoughts, your mind automatically starts to settle down. When you're anxious, you can sometimes feel your heart beating fast and your breathing is very shallow and heavier. So that shows also, that the science has shown that there, when the mind and the breathing affect each other. So when you're anxious, you're breathing shallow, the mind is more agitated. When you're relaxed, when your breathing slows down, when you have deeper breaths, that's what we call pranayama, your mind is less agitated, is settling down. That's what happens when, if you've ever tried going to sleep when you are, if you've just had a difficult conversation in an argument with a loved one, a friend, a coworker, and then you jump into bed, are you going to be able to sleep? Probably not. Very likely not, because the mind is still agitated, the breathing is still excited. So your mind is not able to let go, to fall into a state of relaxation, to sleep. So pranayama is another kind of meditation. What mindfulness is it's also a very ancient Hindu and Buddhist practice of meditation, where the goal is really to just be. And what I mean by that is to just be the observer, for those of you who are coming for Vedanta classes here, you've heard the term sakshi, consciousness as an observer. Consciousness with regard to the mind is the observer. So in mindfulness, you're not trying to control anything. We are not trying to focus our mind. We are not trying to concentrate on any one particular thing. But rather, we are letting our minds become aware of everything that's going on, everything around us, everything within us. And it's a very particular. So we are paying attention. You know, when I say we become aware of everything around us, it might give a false sense that you kind of just let your mind go, you know, loosey-goosey wherever it wants to go. But that's not meditation, obviously. That is daydreaming, wandering, whatever you want to call it. In the meditation aspect comes because you are becoming aware, you are very aware of everything that's going on. You're paying attention, but in a very particular kind, in a very particular way. You're paying attention to the sounds. You're paying attention to the people walking into the room. You're paying attention to your own breathing. You're paying attention to any thoughts that are coming up in the mind. You're paying attention to any discomfort you're feeling in the body. So it's almost like an open-ended awareness. And this gives us a way to tap into that sakshi, to tap into that aspect of consciousness where we can be an observer, where we can observe without being drawn in or caught up in the chatter of our mind. So this particular attention, the attention we pay in a particular kind of way, is a very non-judgmental attention, is a very moment, and literally moment to moment, mindfulness of this moment and the next one and the next one. And it's a very non-judgmental attention. What that means is usually if there is something that we see something that we don't like, or we are alarmed. So when you hear a fire alarm, you know, in a quiet environment, suddenly the fire alarm goes. At once you kind of jump up, you know, your mind is focused. If you are doing something that you really like, you might feel a little bit of irritation. Oh, I have to leave this and get out of the room, get out of the building. You might be alarmed. So if you're looking, if there is something that is disturbing that comes, we always have our personal, our prejudged notion. We always have an opinion. That's just a simple word. When you see somebody in the, you know, say you go for a wedding and you see somebody dressed a little bit flashy, probably in weddings everybody dresses flashy, I think. Or you're meeting somebody for the first time, we at once tend to form an opinion of whether we like or dislike. You may not have a very strong opinion about the person, but there's something that many times we feel we like or we don't like. Forget about a person. A simple thing like a food, a dish. You go to a restaurant, you know, at home probably you or whoever's cooking the food makes things that the whole family eats. But if you go to a restaurant, you order something that you like, but it doesn't turn out the way you thought it would be. So then there's a little bit of expectation, a little bit of irritation, a little bit of judgment. That's what judgment really means. So we judge, we are constantly living our lives judging. Judging what I like, what I don't like. Or I'm neutral. It doesn't really bother me. You know, it's there, it's not there, no big difference. And sadly, many times we extend this to relationships. You know, close relationships, when you've had you're laughing, when you've had a fight with your spouse, you know, you're so angry that you say, I don't care what you say, I don't care what you do. You know you don't really mean that, but that's the attitude we carry with us a lot in our lives. So mindfulness helps us. Mindfulness is a way of looking at life, of living life really, in a very non-judgmental way, in a very awareful. We develop our sensitivity not only to others but to ourselves also. So we learn to know what our body feels like, what our senses feel like. And the meditation, mindfulness meditation, is just different techniques that we use to develop this skill. And usually on the Sundays we meet here, we do two techniques and different techniques every time we meet. You know, the question might come, would mindfulness, by practicing mindfulness, would we kind of become apathetic, not care about anything, just, you know, on this what is this, reduced sensation mode, sensitivity mode. You know, okay, this person is like this, it's okay. This food is there, it's okay. It doesn't matter. And actually, that's the opposite of what happens with mindfulness. What happens is that because we are trying to, we are developing the skill to be non-judgmental, we are also developing the skill on what, how to enjoy every moment that comes and everything that comes in our life. And over time, a shift in perspective takes place where you are no longer so identified with that dish or with that person or with that situation. You get some kind, you get a little bit of breathing space, a distance from the event, that horrible fight that has happened or that terrible argument that has happened that you keep stewing in your minds for days together. We can get a healthy distance from the situation so that we can respond more appropriately. One, it doesn't bother us so much when you respond more appropriately. And two, you're seeing that event or that person or that dish very objectively for what it is, without adding on your, without superimposing our preconceived notion of what it should be. So we begin to learn to accept life on its own terms, not on how we want life to be, because we're all, you know, we're all lived lives. So, you know, many times life doesn't end up the way we want it to be. We have to deal with many situations in life, and mindfulness helps us deal with these situations in a better way. And the other slight difference between mindfulness and other techniques is usually when you are doing mantra japa or any other form of meditation, we usually sit down, you know, you take a time out of your day, perhaps you have a place set in your home at an altar or wherever, sit down for 15-20 minutes as a meditative practice. Mindfulness also, we do that we call that the more, it's a practice that you develop every day. But with mindfulness, you can carry that awareness to outside of the seated posture. What I mean by that is last time we did a mindful listening class. So when you are talking to somebody, you can bring that same awareness, that non-judgmental aspect of mindfulness to that conversation and see how you feel. You can bring mindfulness when you get up from the chair, to see what your body feels like, what are some, perhaps some aches and pains. Walking can be a mindful activity. Shopping can be a mindful activity. Waiting in line, very important mindful activity. Cooking, cleaning, you know, things that we don't like to do. Many of us have to do it anyways. We can bring mindfulness to that, to those activities. So you can carry this meditation throughout the day, you know, except of course when you sleep. I don't think you can learn to sleep mindfully, but there are some techniques actually that we can use, especially for people who have sleeping problems. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night or you're unable to fall asleep. There are specific techniques that can be used to be able to sleep. In this class, I'm not going to teach you that because kind of defeats the purpose of coming here. So the formal practice is what we are doing here, gathering, getting together as a group, we're doing a seated practice. The informal practice is what you do the moment you get up from your chair today and take it through the rest of the week, take it through the rest of your life. There is a lot of scientific validation to mindfulness techniques that started in the 70s. You know, these meditation techniques are very ancient, but in this country, unless there is some science added to it, some proof of concept kind of data available, most people are reluctant to follow or to believe in it. And that's really what happened in the 70s, early 70s and late 70s and early 80s, when mind-body medicine, mind-body connection was not a very strong science. So there was not enough funding, there was not enough research. But over the years, in fact, now I think many hospitals have offer meditation classes. They offer mind-body stress reduction clinics. Mindfulness has become a big tool for therapy, where they offer mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, mindfulness-based stress reduction therapy. There are specific programs. A new one, we did a similar one in one of the classes here, mindfulness-based self-compassion. So there are a lot of scientific, because of a lot of science that has come out of these practices, there is much more awareness in this country. At least, of course, now they add the term mindfulness to pretty much anything and try and sell it as, you know, like how yoga was once upon a time. You add the word yoga and it becomes a business, lucrative business. So unfortunately, mindfulness is becoming like that. And there is now, I think, the mindfulness community is becoming aware of this overextension of mindfulness. So there are a lot of studies going on to show when mindfulness is not a good idea to use, when it is not recommended as a main meditative practice, mostly in therapeutic settings, in relation with the therapist. And you know, if you have some depression, anxiety, and you're getting specific techniques, then hopefully the person is trained to give you that help that you need. So that's a few minutes of just what mindfulness is about. Any questions from especially the newcomers? Okay. Yes.
Raising dogs.
I'm sorry?
Raising dogs. Is it something related to this one? When you're sleeping, you have like a thoughts one to the other.
Racing thoughts. Oh, I heard raising dogs. I think I'm in the wrong, you're in the wrong class. Yeah, you heard that too, right? Yeah. Racing thoughts, yeah. So any meditation can really help with calming down the mind. But with mindfulness, there are techniques that you can, and we'll do one of them today, is where you just observe those racing thoughts. Just the mere fact of observing something helps to calm it down in a very subtle way. And after the practice, you will know whether it's helping you or not. And of course, like anything worthwhile, you have to do it for an extended period of time. So many times people come for one class or you know, even therapy, they go for one or two sessions and say, therapy doesn't work for me. And it's not going to work for you over, you know, your whole life's pattern of thinking isn't going to go change by one session of meditation. So it is a cultivated, it's a developed skill, it's a cultivated skill. Okay, so today the theme really of today's techniques is a little bit Vedantic. So we hear about, you know, when Swamiji, we've heard about either from Swamiji or other gurus, about being the consciousness is the unchanging witness. Consciousness as the witness, consciousness as the observer. So we're going to try and apply that principle to try and see what it really means. You know, when Swamiji says it or when you hear it, What does it mean? You know, we don't seem to have a tangible experience, or I don't like to use the word experience, tangible idea or tangible experience is really the word. It's not the right word, but you know what? I guess you can get what I'm trying to say. How do you know? How do you be that awareful witness? What is that awareful witness? What is that we hear about? So in these techniques, both the techniques today, we're going to try and get a glimpse of that. using mindfulness, using a meditation practice. Okay. So let's get ready for the first meditation. So in this meditation, as in any other meditation, it's important to sit fairly straight. And the reason is, you know, if you're sitting for 10, 15 minutes or longer and your posture is not comfortable, then you're going to develop back pain and neck pain, which will be a distraction to the meditation. So if you're sitting on the back jacks, you can push your butt behind against the back of the chair and keeping your head. So if you sit back like that, very likely you're going to be relaxing very soon. So I would suggest come forward a little bit from the back of the chair. And if you're sitting on the regular chairs, making sure that your feet are firmly planted on the floor. If your feet don't touch the floor, you can move forward in your chair. Again, so that you're not falling. You don't have the fear. That shouldn't be a thought in the meditation. Oh, am I going to fall off? You know? So getting a comfortable posture and keeping your hands on your laps or clasped together. And the head is looking straight, not up nor down, because we want to make sure we don't injure or hurt our neck during the practice. And you can gently close your eyes. And just coming into this posture, adjusting your posture as needed. The posture in itself is not the end, but it signifies, it symbolizes alertness and dignity. So if you're uncomfortable in any way right now, you may adjust your posture so that you are comfortable, but you're also alert. For this first practice, we are going to use our own breathing as an anchor. And what I mean for as anchor is that every time our mind wanders away, which it will, without doubt, we just bring our attention, our awareness back to our breathing. So we can begin by becoming aware of the flow of air that comes into our body and leaves the body with each breath. We don't need to change our breathing pattern. We just bring our awareness to the in-breath and to the out-breath. Tracing the passage of air as it comes in through the nostrils, goes down the throat, the back of the mouth, into the windpipe, into the lungs, expanding the lungs as we breathe in. And the same air leaving the body with the lungs collapsing, the breath passing back up through the lung, through the trachea, through the windpipe, the back of the mouth, and out the nostrils. We just breathing. You don't have to do anything right now. Just becoming aware of your own breathing. This flow of breath, the flow of air, happens whether or not you're paying attention to it. So all we are doing now is turning our attention and our awareness to this already existent flow of air that comes in and leaves the body with each in-breath and with each out-breath. And it's important to note that we are not thinking about this breath. We are trying to experience or know this breath in a very non-verbal manner. You can almost imagine yourself outside of your body, or you're observing your own body from outside. You're being the observer of your own breathing body. The body continues to breathe. You just observe. There might be some subtle changes, differences from breath to breath, and see if you can observe those differences. Just being the observer, moment by moment, breath by breath, of this breathing body. The body continues to breathe. All we are doing is observing, being the observer of this breath. Feeling, knowing, trying to experience or trying to understand or see what this flow of breath, flow of air feels like from one breath to the next. And it's very likely that our minds have wandered off. Perhaps we've been distracted by the sounds in the room, by our own thoughts. Maybe Maybe we have something going on in our minds, planning, worrying. Or it might just, you might just be drowsy. Whatever is happening in the mind, whatever is causing the distraction from the surroundings or within you, we just take a moment to notice what the distraction is. This observation itself is a practice in mindfulness. We observe the distraction, and then very gently we bring our awareness back to this breathing body, to be the observer of this breathing body. Even though the breath is one, it's constantly changing. When you breathe in and when you breathe out, you observe different parts of the body that are moving or where you feel the breath most intensely. And that changes from breath to breath. So even though the flow of the air changes, you, the observer, remain unchanged. You, the observer of the changing flow of air into and out of your body, remain unchanged. And every time our mind wanders, we gently draw it back without any commentary or without judgment. The wandering mind is not a defect. It is natural for the mind to wander. We just notice when it has wandered and draw it back to being the observer, to being the unchanging observer of our own breathing. Just observe. Just observe. And we'll continue to do so in silence for a few minutes until you hear the sounds of the bell. concludes this meditation, and you may open your eyes and stretch out whenever you're ready. So how was that? Usually we spend a few minutes after each practice to kind of put into words what that experience was like so that we better understand ourselves, really. Anybody have any comments or thoughts they would like to share? But were you able to be the observer of, even though you...
You have to let go of trying to control
the breathing.
And let it go, and then come back. Then immediately it goes back.
Yeah.
So it's a process.
So I think people who practice yoga, pranayama techniques more regularly, they don't know how to breathe normally. But, you know, pranayama is a great technique. And we do it here as well. The idea of just breathing at a normal pace, you know, as you normally do, because this is something that you can hone into at any time of the day. You know, because pranayama also you can. So if you're going to go into a stressful situation, you can learn to observe your breath. It may or may not be the right appropriate place to do pranayama, especially if you're doing all the kumbhaka and all those things, you know. So you have this breath with you 24/7, and thank God for it. But we really take it for granted, right? Many times we don't pay attention to our breathing until we have some physical problem. You know, if you have a cold, or you have a sinus infection, or you know, you have some lung issues and you have difficulty breathing, then your awareness goes completely to it, you know, 100% of the time. We were at a kirtan group, Arshabodha Kirtan. So we have a group there. We go around to assisted living facilities and nursing homes, and we do kirtans for the residents there. Kirtans, and we kind of, you know, interact with them and chant prayers and sing bhajans and kirtans. And we went there a couple of weeks back. There was a lady at the back of the room on an oxygen tank, and she couldn't even come into the room because there was no outlet to connect her oxygen cylinder to. And she was coughing so badly most of the time. And you could make out, she must have been in, you know, late 70s, early 80s. And you could just make out the physical stress that she was having. You could make out the stress on her face when she was coughing. She's having a hard time breathing, you know, and that's, we just take it for granted. So these practices hopefully will help us become familiar with our own breath so that we'll know when there's a change. If you feel your breathing becoming shallower, then probably, you know, something is coming in your mind. You know, something is going to come that's stressing you up, or has already come, and you can do something about it. You can learn to observe it, learn to breathe deeply so that you're able to deal with that stress that is potentially lurking out there. Any other comments or thoughts?
Yeah. So this time, since you mentioned specifically that you being an observer, so many times my mind was wondering whether I should view myself as somebody sitting from outside, looking at my body, you know, like that experience was going on for some time. And of course, usual thoughts back from there, but that was mainly thought process just for this going through most of the time. Then I felt that I was basically following your direction or instructions, and when I open my eyes, generally I realize that I'm sitting in front of or in presence of about 30 people actually.
So it looks like your mind wandered, but also you had some depth in that you were able to forget where you're sitting or where your location was. Mind wandering is absolutely normal. So the reason for suggesting that you can observe, think of yourself as observing yourself from outside, that's really actually a good technique to use. So to give you some distance. So if you're looking at a statue, you know that statue is not you, right? So you have some physical distance, but you also have some emotional, mental space. So if you look at yourself as a breathing statue, then you can almost, these are kooky terms, lift yourself out of your body. That's not what we're wanting to do at all. But it's almost like observing a breathing body. It's your body, but you are now the observer of that body. So you get a little bit of distance between. So whatever happens to the body is not happening to me because I'm the observer of the body. It's just so simple, but, it's hard. Vedanta is really very simple, but I think it takes years and years for us to really get it. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. You had something? So our next practice is going to be a little extension on this theme of being the observer. This is actually a very good practice. All practices are good. And there the judgment is coming. This is a good practice. This is not so good practice. All practices are just that, practices. Whether they work or don't work depends on... I wouldn't say it doesn't depend on the person teaching it. I think it depends on you, on the time of day, on what's going on in your life. So the same practice that has worked, today you might have had a great meditation. You tried the same technique tomorrow, your mind might be going all over the place. So every practice is just that. It's a practice. What we learn from it is really to know ourselves better, to be able to respond better. So this next technique we're going to use is an extension of being the observer, and we're going to use a guided imagery of a mountain. This is a mountain metaphor, and I'll guide you through it. It just extends what we did with the breath a little bit more, and let's see how it works for you. Okay, so again, sitting in a fairly straight posture with the head, neck, and trunk perpendicular to the base of the body. Eyes are gently closed and hands can be resting on the lap. And in this meditation, this posture is a little important because we want to hold this posture as much as possible. So settle into something that is comfortable for you. Without being rigid, you can relax your head and neck. And a way to do that, you can relax your shoulders is by raising them and then letting them drop. And sitting with a fairly straight back. Allowing your body to become still. And of course, if during the meditation you have any discomfort, you're welcome to adjust your posture. But I would just suggest you do it mindfully so that you are with the meditation as well. So keeping the head and neck tall, our trunk straight, our shoulders are relaxed, sitting on a firm base, crossing your legs if you're sitting on the floor so that you have stability. and sitting with a sense of alertness and dignity. And as before, we turn our attention, our awareness towards our breathing. Just notice that you are breathing. So now we try and bring into our mind's eye a mountain, perhaps something that you have seen and you really like, the image of a mountain. Perhaps you've seen it in a picture, bringing into your mind's eye a tall mountain. If you haven't seen one, you can imagine what that would be like. Visualizing the tall peak of the mountain. Maybe your mountain has more than one peak. Visualizing in great detail the sides of the mountain. They might be steep or gradually sloping down. If you're visualizing more than one peak, perhaps there's a high plateau to your mountain. Springing into your mind's eye this magnificent, huge mountain that you can imagine or you have seen. This mountain stands tall. The peak rises high into the sky. The sides of the mountain might have trees on them. And the base of the mountain is firmly rooted in the earth's crust below. Here is this tall, magnificent, unmoving mountain. Maybe the peak of the mountain has snow, covered with snow. And there are trees and flowers growing on the sides of the mountain, heavy shrubs. Picture in as much detail as you can your mountain. And as you visualize this mountain, we can metaphorically bring this mountain into us, imagining that we are sitting, we and the mountain have become one. Your head and neck representing the tall peak of the mountain. The sides of your bodies and shoulders and arms representing the sides of the mountain. the trunk of your body, the base of your body, rooted firmly on the floor beneath you, representing the base of the mountain, rooted firmly in the ground, in the earth. This mountain just sits tall, majestic. It is as though you and your mountain have become one. Continuing to breathe, you are now a breathing mountain, as it were. This mountain stands tall, sees day and night as the sun travels across the sky. Day followed by night, followed by day again. The mountain might have a canopy of stars above. At night, when the moon is brightly lit. And during the day, the mountain might experience scorching heat from the sun. The mountain remains still, unchanging. Day by day, moment by moment, day by day, week by week, year after year, the mountain witnesses seasons. In the spring, there might be many plants, many colored varieties of trees and shrubs on the mountain slopes. There might be many critters and bugs and creatures coming out of their holes, coming out of the ground onto the slopes, the sides of the mountain. The mountain remains still, unmoving, unchanging, as new life comes about. As spring turns to summer, the sun becomes stronger. Sun is felt stronger and more brightly on the mountain top. The mountain, the surface of the mountain experiences a great deal of heat from the rays of the sun. The plants may begin to dry up in the heat. The mountain remains tall, firmly rooted to the ground, unchanging, unmoving. As summer turns to fall, the mountain may be covered by a blanket of bright colors of the leaves turning. The mountain remains unaffected, standing tall, through these changes. And as winter comes around, the mountain might have snow falling on it, might be covered by a blanket of snow. The leaves are all gone. The days have become shorter. There might be freezing rain, yet the mountain stands unchanging, unmoving. Unaffected, in a way, by all these changing seasons. Being the observer, unchanging observer of all these seasons, unaffected by the changes that happen moment to moment, day to day, season after season, years after years. And the mountain might have visitors come to see the mountain. And some of them might say, oh, what a beautiful mountain it is. What a gorgeous mountain it is. Most breathtaking mountain on a nice, bright, sunny day. While still others might come on a really foggy, damp day, cloudy day, and say there's nothing to see. This mountain is not beautiful at all. The mountain doesn't get affected by what people say or do not say. It just remains, it just sits tall. In our own lives, we might go through seasons. Seasons of spring, happiness, and seasons of dullness, seasons of winter. Perhaps our minds might be disturbed or agitated by the storm in our own minds. We might feel agitated or disturbed. We might be happy or dull. We can learn to be the observer of all these changes that go on in our mind, that go on in our lives. We can become like the mountain, the observer of all these changes in our minds, in our bodies. Just as the mountain remains unaffected season after season, we too can learn to be unaffected by everything that is going on in our lives, in our minds, in our bodies, by being the observer of all these changes that are bound to happen or that are already happening. And just as the mountain remains firmly rooted in its own self, we too can learn to remain firmly rooted in our own self, in our awareness, in our consciousness, recognizing that nothing external, nothing internal can affect who we truly are. We can learn to embody the mountain . Sit tall like the mountain, to be the unchanging observer of everything that changes. So as we come to the conclusion of this meditation, let us spend the next few minutes in silence, embodying this mountain, knowing that you are the unchanging observer, and nothing really affects you. And we'll do so until you hear the sounds of the bell. Whenever you're ready, you may open your eyes and stretch out if you need to. So, how was this? There's no responses. I presume it is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mind wandering is very normal, especially, have you practiced meditation before? Yeah, so if you're new to meditation, doesn't matter what type of meditation you do, it's just training the mind. The mind wandering is absolutely normal. What I would suggest to get into the habit of meditating is 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day. And mantra japa is probably a very good technique to help prevent the mind from wandering. So you can pick up any mantra that you like and repeat. We have several on our website as well that Swamiji has posted. We also have a Saturday class. Every Saturday we have meditation class in the morning that Swamiji does. And just 5 minutes a day, and you'll see over time, you know, over a couple of weeks to months, you can slowly increase that time. And you would be the best judge to know whether it's effective or not.
So what time
is that? Meditation is at 10 to 11. Yeah. Every Saturday, Swamiji does a, usually a different technique every time.
Observing all mountains, whatever, here and there, my mind was moving from this mountain. I was comparing the mountains.
Yeah, that is bound to happen. And I think for many people, unless one particular one really stands out in mind that you've actually seen, it's hard to bring one mountain to mind. You know, like you said, we've seen pictures of mountains, we've seen, you know, programs or shows with mountain, that on the TV. But unless it's like, I'm sure if you go to the Himalayas and see the mountains there, when you come back and do this meditation, that's all you're going to think about. Yeah.
A little bit of judgment came in on this, in a way that has like, the weather is just trying to get better. I don't want to visualize snow on the mountain now. it's my own likes and probably if I was a person who loved winter, it might have been different.
Yeah.
But I was kind of shunning away from visualizing snow on the mountains.
So yeah, this judgment of if you live in this part of the country, you're going to have snow. You're going to have to deal with winter. But many people don't like it. And unfortunately, there's not much we can do about it. So we can learn to change our relationship to that like or that dislike. You know, some people, I think weather is just such a topic that it's always not what we want it to be, you know. So if it's winter, we want summer to come. If it's summer, we're saying, oh, it's too hot. So there's never, I don't think I've seen any person who is satisfied through, you know, with the weather, no matter what. And that's, you're right, that's where the judgment comes. And we extend it. Weather is one thing we can't control. Like that, there are so many situations in our life that we can't control that just get dropped on our lap. We didn't ask for the difficult situation. So recognizing where the judgment is coming helps you shift your perspective a little bit so that you are no longer judging. Or you might still be judging, but then you are not saying, oh, I don't want this. You know, you can turn that, okay, the season is there. I may not like it, but let me do whatever I can to manage. So that's the shift that happens, you know. Anybody else? Okay, I guess everybody is still with their mountain. Anybody had difficulties with this? Any particular difficulties with the metaphor? It's beautiful. Yeah, I like this too. I like this.
Very nice. Very nice. Unshaken.
Yeah. So I presume you're not coming for other classes here, right? Have you been coming?
Last week I came, first time, this is my second.
Okay.
I didn't bring my
Okay. So if you are coming for Swamiji's classes and have heard some of the Vedanta, this is a very powerful technique that will help you get very grounded in that reality. So you can learn, you can practice this anytime. Not only with Vedanta, you can even, anytime something comes up in life that shakes you up, a medical situation, loss of somebody, or whatever the crisis is a strong word, whatever the situation comes in your life that kind of unsettles you, unnerves you a little bit. If you have to make a decision, job change, moving, retiring, whatever, this technique might help you get very grounded to reality, just like that mountain is grounded, doesn't move. You can learn to be if you have to make a decision about quitting one job, taking another job, you can have that sense of observing the mind going through everything, and maybe that will help you get some distance to figure out in a more better way on the pros and cons of each thing, of each decision that you take. I think it might help ground you a little bit more. Okay, no other question? Yeah.
In the beginning, you have said that what is all this consciousness and that, and we took meditation. So, and right now we are all learning about more consciousness. Swamiji is also talking about. So, how do you explain now?
So, this is really getting in touch with that sakshi, that witness. Sakshi is really consciousness with regard to the mind. The mind is really like this. Mind plays a dual role. So the mind, with regard to the external world, observes everything, sees everything, knows everything. But with regard to consciousness, it becomes observed or known by consciousness. So mind has this dual function. So what we are trying to do is tap into that function of the mind. One, we are seeing the mountain, seeing our body, seeing our minds as the seer. But you also know that the mind is being seen by consciousness, and that consciousness doesn't change. Nothing happens to it. So the mind is going through, just as the mountain is going through all these seasons, and people commenting, that's a big one. In our lives, we get so affected by what people say. Just words. Our minds get affected, our feelings get hurt. So when somebody says something nasty, this is a great technique, when somebody says something mean about you, or says something harsh to you, or praises you, go back to being the mountain. We're just sitting there, people are passing comments, nothing happens to it. So the mountain is almost like the mind. It sees and it is seen also. So we're trying to tap into that aspect.
One more thing I want to think about. With both meditations, I could significantly make the difference with both meditations today. Because I was thinking meditation is meditation. How to make difference between the techniques of meditation. Like the first one with the breath, I really observed the breath. Second time I really didn't care about the breath. It completely concentrated on what you were telling. It's excellent guided process you did, actually. Because I could concentrate very well. Both. I could make it totally difference between those two meditations.
So the experience you had was very different. That's really where we put our minds to, right? We end up experiencing where we put our minds to. So if somebody says something mean and you keep dwelling on it, your mind is there, you're going to get affected by it. You just brush it off. People have a right to say whatever they want to say. Just because they say you're a monkey doesn't make you a monkey, right? So let them say whatever they want. So, but my point, I'm just making a flippant thing about it. But the point is really to go into that state, to know that you are that unchanging consciousness, that you are that awareness which nothing can touch, nothing can, neither external people saying things or your own, your body, you have aches and pains, or you have, your mind is going all over the place, nothing is going to touch
being
that.
More objective.
I'm sorry, yeah, being more objective, yeah.
I have a general question.
Yeah.
So when, if it's pranayama or mantra japa, then I'm able to do it myself without somebody guiding me. Because you get into the practice, you know the general technique of mantra japa, you might say it out loud, you might just lip it, and then you might just say it in your head. And but with some of these mindfulness practices, I feel like there is a necessity for a guiding voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that voice that becomes an anchor sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to our breath, your voice is also an anchor
mm-hmm.
for us. Sort of a reminder, go back to your breath, go back
mm-hmm.
to your breath kind of thing. So I find that it's then I have to, when I'm at home and I want to practice, I need to definitely have some other tools. And that's the one thing that I find, that without another tool, I by myself am not able to do it. But I have Insight Timer and other things
mm-hmm.
like that have this mm-hmm. voice to guide me. So do you have any general suggestions? Do people do this without anybody guiding?
Yes, so whether you need an external source of guidance for the practice, it really it depends on the day. Some days I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to hear anybody. And there are some days that I absolutely want to hear a guide, you know, somebody's voice there, whoever you connect with. Of course, all our meditations we are posting online. So if you like a particular practice, you can always go back and listen to that for that day. Over time, I think most people, you develop mindfulness, you develop these skills to such an extent that over time, it just becomes second nature. You just become aware, but it is a, you know, initially can be several years. Initially, it may not just be 1 or 2 weeks or a few months. Initially, it takes a lot of effort to put your mind to be aware of what you're doing, how you're feeling, how you're interacting with others. But I think that's really what helps to build the skill. And over time, you may or may not need a guidance, external source of guidance. But even over time, you know, there might be days that it's just nice to listen to something new. That's what I do, you know. I like to listen for these techniques. I go and listen to new stuff. And some work great. Some are just, you know, I don't know what they're talking about kind of thing. You know. So
you can take or something with us, right?
Sure, I'll come to each of. But the meditations are being posted. You know, whichever we can. There are some practices that we do outside, so obviously we can't post those. But it's just a developing the skill and developing. Initially, it is hard because you forget. You have to be conscious to remind yourself. Okay, I'm chopping vegetables. What am I thinking about? Am I thinking about the chopping or am I thinking about 10 other things going on? So it just takes a little bit of effort, like I said, initially, but that initially can be...
That is being conscious, right?
Yeah, that's being aware, that's being conscious. Okay, any other questions? So we usually like to end each class with a quotation that connects to the practice and kind of helps us. Maybe we can carry it through the week. So this is something by Joseph Goldstein. He says, "Wisdom is the clear seeing of the impermanent, conditioned nature of all phenomena. Wisdom is the clear seeing of the impermanent, conditioned nature of all phenomena, knowing that whatever arises has the nature to cease. When we see this impermanence deeply, we no longer cling. When we see this impermanence deeply, we no longer cling. And when we no longer cling, we come to the end of suffering, which is really very Vedantic, you know, that's very Vedantic, yeah. Okay, so next Sunday we'll have a musical meditation class that Swamiji will do, and we'll end with our closing prayer. For those of you who are coming for the first time, we chant this Vedic prayer, Om Bhadram No Apivataya Manaha. We chant it three times. Basically means, may my mind not be a source of struggle for me. May my mind be a blessing for me. Okay. Om Bhadram No Apivataya Manaha. Om Bhadram No Apivataya Manaha. Om Bhadram No Apivataya Manaha. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Good, thank you all for coming. And see how many days you can be a mountain this week, this month.